Raised Rowdy. Everybody, welcome to the Raised Rowdy podcast. Now that we're here, my name is Kurt Ozon.
I'm Nick Tressler.
We got our esteemed guest, Mr. Brent Cobb. Welcome to the podcast.
Howdy. Hey, yes. Man. Yeah, glad to be here. Yes. Finally, we did it.
Yeah. We had some scheduling difficulties on both ends.
Yeah.
I got some cool gigs. I was like, I got to go do these.
Yeah.
So, got to get paid, but we did it, and we're here together, and we're here to talk about music and friendship and karate and all that jazz.
Mm.
How you been, bro? It's been a minute since I've seen you.
Man, I've been good. Same deal. Cool gigs. Can't turn down. You know, just got off the break. It was a nice break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Happy 2026.
Yeah. Yeah. Happy New Year. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I needed a break. It was time. It was a big year last year. Real busy.
Yeah.
But good. Kids are good. Lights are on. Babies are fed.
Hell yeah. Well, God bless. All right, I guess we're done then.
Bye, y'all have a good one.
No, but I mean, like you said, definitely a busy year. Maybe let's start with the record. So, one of the things that I thought that was super cool was that you have a band called The Fixins.
The Fixins. Yeah.
Why don't we talk about just the recording process of this record and kind of how you got there, what it looked like?
So, yeah, I got this band pretty much. Mostly the same band that I've had for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Same band that was out with us on the
Luke tour.
Yep, the Luke tour a couple years ago. And I just, you know, they all come from like rock background. And like Lynn, the drummer, he and Josh are from Mississippi. Lynn started this old band, Color Revolt, back in the day. I don't know if y'all have heard of them, but they're like this southern goth rock band, you know, but it all comes natural for him to do that. Josh, same way. Bass Drum of Death is a song, a band that he was in, and Matt McDaniel is like Chameleon, you know, from Georgia, and it just seemed natural to get all together and try to go for a rock and roll album.
I love it.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah. I'm proud of it. And we went down to Orrin Thornton's little spot down in Springfield, Missouri. That's supposed to be the Springfield from like The Simpsons.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like everywhere has a Springfield, but that's supposed to be like
The one.
But so we went down there. I've been working with Orrin for 15 years. He would do the demos, you know, Music Row, songwriting demos, and I trust him. And he also comes from a rock and roll background. He was, you remember DC Talk?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jesus Freak?
Yeah.
That solo is 16-year-old Orrin Thornton.
What?
I know. Blew my
mind. That's badass.
It's badass.
Yeah.
And so it just made sense. We went down there and recorded live to tape in a room about this size.
I love that. I
ain't rocked in a while.
Yeah. Well, your live show definitely rocks. So
thanks.
It's now the recorded music is sort of matching the live show, it seems like.
Yeah, that was part of it. I feel like we would show up at a lot of places on my own tours and people would sort of be taken back a little, you know, sometimes it felt like.
They're expecting acoustic, keep them on them toes. And,
exactly.
Yeah, and they're getting the
like that Southern Star, man.
Yeah.
And we would do more of the rock stuff from, you know, like Providence Canyon or, I don't know, all the stuff. I've always liked bar guitar and a honky tonk crowd, you know, Whiskey Myers recorded several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I would always lean into some of those because it's funner to do live, right?
Totally.
And, but I just wanted to give people like a album of reference.
I think that's cool too because, and again, like having seen you on the Luke tour, like your live show is rocking, you know? And I've seen you from, like I saw you at Club Cafe when you were.
Totally, you know, way back.
Way different than what it sounds like now. Uh-huh. So it is kind of cool. I mean, some bands you'll go see live and they do not sound at all like the record, right. Completely different experience.
Uh-huh.
So even if it's like, you know, whatever direction things go from here, now you have, when someone listens to this, they got a good idea of what the live band sounds like.
It exists on a bigger scale.
Yeah.
For something to compare it to. Yeah, I think so. And yeah, that's, I always say that sometimes I rock, sometimes I roll, a little country, a little soul, but it's all Southern. And, you know, that includes rock. And I grew up with that. I grew up right down the road from Mike. Well, you've been down there.
Elleville,
Georgia.
Yeah. Were you down there for Christmas or?
Yeah.
Okay. We're probably a couple blocks from each other.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, so he's from the same hometown as Kaylee, my girlfriend.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
I have a photo on my phone somewhere where it says, like, welcome to Elleville, home of Brent Cobb and Kelly.
No, it doesn't. It says home of Grand Ole Opry stars. Kaylee Hammock and Brent Cobb.
Hell yeah.
And now it's got Stilts out there, Dakota Allbritton from the Savannah Bananas.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, because he's famous. He's on there now.
Yeah.
Famous.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. Ellaville's a cool little.
It is, man. Yeah, it's small town USA for sure. Absolutely.
Straight up.
Yeah, yeah.
It's exactly. I remember writing with, I guess it don't matter. I was writing with like Scooter Caruso a long time ago at Carnival and or Travis Hill, you know, and, he was like, man, you know, we're writing this little song about a little town in America. And he was like, you think this little town exists? You know, the one that everybody writes about all the time and got the little one red light. And I was like, yeah, I'm
from there.
I'm from there, man. It's for real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my mom's from St. Mary's, if you've ever been over there on the East Coast.
I haven't been there, but I know about St. Mary's. Man, that's the pretty side of Georgia over there.
Yeah. Yeah, on the coast.
Yeah, man.
Elville has its own sort of different kind of beauty.
No, yeah, yeah.
Weren't they like making single wides and stuff down there?
If that is, and which is beautiful to me. Yeah. That's I grew up in a single wide. We graduated to a double wide. They hold a special place in my heart.
Amen.
Yep. But that Dave is from like over there, like the Savannah area.
Oh, okay.
Is it Tybee Island? There's an island over there that he's from. But yeah, it's beautiful down there. Man, it's pretty down there.
I got to say that, listening, I know you cut this record in Missouri, but it just sounds like Georgia to me a lot.
Well, I can't shake that off.
Not at all. Yeah, and we're glad you didn't.
Yeah.
But I also hear like a lot of, like I grew up a rock guy. Like I didn't know who George Strait was until I was like 20 or so. You know what I mean? Like, and so Nick, same way, right?
Yeah.
So listening to this record, I hear Zeppelin riffs straight with up. Some of the stuff, like the acoustic guitar mixed with the electric riffage. I hear some Sabbath stuff.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Metallica fan. Nothing that thrashy, of course.
I know. It's hard to do.
Yeah.
You can't sing like, you can't have my accent and pull it off.
I agree.
I've tried.
I think there's something cool. It's like nothing on this record feels like it's trying too hard and nothing is overdone. You know what I mean? Because it's like if you try to do it too aggressive, then
it's like, come on.
Then you lose the countryness of it.
Like full of shit. It doesn't seem authentic, right?
Yes.
Thanks,
and all the guitars just sound like the amps are very loud.
They were.
I'm very well aware, yeah.
So damn loud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you guys cut it all together in a room, like live tracked it?
We did. I was only one outside of the room.
Yeah.
But I was just through a door. I played with everybody, but I'm not used to playing electric riffs. And I wrote, for this album, I would start with riffs and then, you know, try to let that inspire whatever the lyrics were going to be. And, it doesn't come as natural to like sing while also trying to do a riff like that instead of just strumming a regular acoustic pattern. And so for safety, I was the only one that wasn't live. And then I would go back and
cut the vocals.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah, it's if you've ever tried to play "Come As You Are" and sing it at the same time,
no way, man.
It's fucking impossible. It's like so confusing.
My brain does not work that way.
Yeah, And I feel like even like when I've been in rock bands, I would still write on an acoustic guitar the riffs and then bring it to electric. But I guess like you were just so intentional with like putting out like a rock record, so you just started everything on electric.
Mostly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it all, or bass. I would pick up a bass because it would make me think, like, it just makes riffs sort of be created differently.
Totally.
That I would never come up with. And so, and really, I got my son, who for his 5th birthday a couple years ago, a drum kit, a little jazz kit. And he's been banging around on them, and I would set my amp up, an electric guitar, and we would just jam. He called it Brothers Rock. And
was so awesome.
And so we would be rocking, and he'd be like, "Daddy, play some rock and roll guitar." And I'd like, you know, it was like hit a little thing, and he got, "No, man, like play some rock and roll guitar, Daddy." He wanted to rock, so I'd hit another little lick, and he still was not phasing him at all. And he's like, "Play some rock and roll like Mattman, Daddy." And so that's when I started coming up with that. Ain't rocked in a while. And was so really to try to impress him that like I can rock, and that is really what made the whole album happened was me trying to prove to Tuck that I can like rock.
And did it work?
Hmm.
Was he like, yeah?
No, he feels it now. Okay. Yeah, he sees it now, which I'm grateful for.
I mean, you might need to bust out like Eruption or something.
Something. See, yeah. Yeah, I know. I can't get down quite like that. Yeah, so if that's what little buddy's looking for, then his dad ain't going to make him proud, you know?
I love the idea of recording the tape. I just feel like, is it just logistically a pain in the fucking ass or what?
Man, you know, there are two solid sides of that coin. Mm-hmm. Some people, especially engineers, feel real strongly about it's the modern world and we can mimic that warmth and all of it, you know. If you have an engineer that doesn't feel that way and they just genuinely appreciate tape, then it's not that difficult because they know what to do and they know a quick way to do it. And it's a little more time consuming. But we would record a tape, dump into Pro Tools, or we would record to Pro Tools and reprint to tape and then back into Pro Tools to where we would get the true, like, you know, you can imitate that sound through programs, but it really is a physical difference, mm-hmm. which is nothing, but it's like, but I think it makes a sonic difference. Each take is completely different, and it's fun.
In the process of recording, it's like you have to be a lot more like purposeful because it's not like, oh, we'll just quantize this afterwards,
right?
You know, it's like, well, I better not fuck up because we run out of tape. Or it's costing money.
It is, but see, it is the modern world.
Yeah,
you can record straight to tape, but you do have the option mm-hmm. again to dump it into Pro Tools, mess with it, and it's not like recording the tape in 1973. Totally. You know,
when you have 4 or 8 tracks or
and
whatever.
That really is it. Yeah.
Yeah. Although I will say that this record, and Nick was, we were kind of going over our thoughts on it, and I was like, to me, it sounds like a very good garage band.
Exactly.
It sounds like a bunch of brothers in a really good sounding room just riffing. You know what I mean? It reminds me of like when me and my buddies would just drink Bud Heavy and try to combine Metallica and Skinner together. Yep. You know what I mean?
It was the absolute intention.
And I think, like, you know, things I'm listening for, like, on the production side is, like, there's no, like, crazy ping pong delays or, like, anything like that. There's some, it's a pretty dry
mostly
record.
Dry, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
But, I'm excited, man. Thanks for, first of all, just thanks for even paying attention and giving a shit.
Yeah,
but,
dude.
But I would try to, like, I like to use natural reverb. Like, we had plates down there, and there were a couple chambers that we mm-hmm. had to choose from. But more than anything, I like to use room mics for the ambiance mm-hmm. of whatever, you know. And so a lot of times I would intentionally try to – I want it mostly dry, but then any, like, wetness or whatever I would want to come from the two-corner room mics, you know, picking up the actual
– band.
Yeah.
And everything.
And sort of just – bleed that into the mix.
Yeah, and I think, like, me, as if I'm going into a session, usually it's like I'm throwing delays on stuff or like uh-huh. space and stuff like that. And so this is just a lot more of a simpler, authentic approach, I think.
It's garage.
Yeah, totally. And like, I grew up in a garage band, mm-hmm. like, you know, since I was 10 years old. So,
well, there's not as many of those albums anymore.
No, there's
that,
not.
That I think. Part of what made us all pick up a guitar in the first place is we felt like we could do what they're doing, mm-hmm. you know, sort of like that early Zeppelin stuff it's way more complicated than you think it is at that age. You don't realize, you know, but still it felt like you could do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like it felt like the Jimmy Page riffs and like how yeah. dry a lot of that is. It was also intentional. He wanted it to be, you know, super sound simple. But, you know, yeah. simple doesn't mean easy. And but I wanted to do that, too, for inspiration reasons.
I remember for Christmas I got a Led Zeppelin tab book, which is like, you know, music for Zeppelin 4. And, of course, I started with the intro to Stairway to Heaven. Yeah. And,
as you do.
Yeah, and I got a couple notes into it. And then it's like if you don't play music, it's hard to really describe the feeling of when you first start playing other people's music.
Mm.
And because to me it was like James Hetfield or Jimmy Page, like these people are like they must be doing something so far away from what I'll ever be able to do. And then when you learn their music the exact same way that they played it on that record, it's this weird thing that happens where you're like, I can't even fucking believe I'm able to do this.
Yeah.
And then I freaked out because I got the first four notes. I ran to my parents and they were watching a movie and they paused the movie. I'm like, check this out. And I started playing it and it would sound terrible. And they're like, are you trying to play Stairway? I'm like, I am playing Stairway. And they're like, awesome. Hell yeah.
Yeah, you're doing it. Yeah, man. Well, that's the thing, ain't it?
Yes.
That's what's that Tom Petty quote where somebody was like, well, what you do is interviewers like, what you do is just so simple, you know? And Tom's like, well, if it's so simple, why isn't everybody doing it?
Yeah.
But the same thing with Stairway to Heaven. You're like, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
That's how you're supposed to feel, man.
When oh, like, man, what a rush.
But I don't think there's as many of those. Like, that's what's cool about country music, and to me, is, and historically, is that, like, it always felt obtainable. Like, you felt like as a, you know, up and come, or like, you know, learning musician, that I can do that. And I think that's, like, it makes itself, it feels available mm-hmm. and welcoming to whatever, beginners. And there's not as many rock albums like that now. And now so many things are built with just tracks or track by track. Not everybody can afford to have that rig, you know, at the house. And I think there is something that, like, lends itself to where you make, you know, as a teenager, you're like, oh, I can get together with my buddies in a garage and rock out.
Yeah.
You know?
And I love the riffs. This album is chock full of, like, golden guitar riffs.
Thanks, man.
Right? And in country music, you don't have as many riffs as you do rock. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But there has been a lot of riffs, at least in my world, playing with the Luke.
Y'all throw it down.
There's some riffs on there's the records, man. It's like the Beer Never Broke My Heart riff is fun, and Oklahoma and all that. And all this stuff, it's like, on this new record, it's like Sabbathy and country and just Riff Town, USA. It's great.
Yeah, I love that. Like, when I was listening to the record and I was, like, re-listening over here and track comes on, I like that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
When a song comes on, that's the rock thing for me, is, like, when a song comes on and you can just feel the music right from the start.
Yeah, or recognize it from the riff.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what's exactly great about it. If the riff is a hook, it's as much of a melodic, you know, hook as whatever lyric hook is.
Yes.
And, a lot of y'all's stuff is that way.
Yeah.
The crowd in the first 3 seconds, they know it because of the riff.
Yep.
We are missing that shit, man. I just love it. I just have always loved it.
I think that's so true. And something I don't even think about, you know, just coming from a fandom, I'm like, why does this song catch me?
Mm-hmm.
It's because you remember that melody and it comes from that guitar right off the bat. Yeah, super man. Cool.
Also, I've noticed this too. I don't know if you guys have. There's some songs where there's like a sig lick in the beginning where it's like, it's awesome. When you kick in that lick, it's great. But it's like, is that part really good, or is it the song that makes that thing good? Like, I listened to, like, Hurricane, like Luke's first song at radio.
Yeah,
the intro is na 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 na. It's just like three notes, three or four different notes, really. But I'm like, but the song is so catchy when you hear it. Like, it's like some Pavlovian response you hear to the beginning of the song that makes you excited
in your head forever.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But yeah, would you, if the song, yeah, I don't know, if the song wasn't as catchy all the way through, would the riff be as catchy?
Right.
From the top.
It's like the song informs the catchiness of the sig lick in the intro.
And then your subconscious gets excited, like mm-hmm. you said, yeah, about the rest of the song. I don't know. That riff is pretty catchy.
Yeah, it is. But so is the song.
Yeah.
But then there's all these like little pentatonic sig licks of like in the bro country era that were all like one or two kind of different combinations, because all the songs were like 41, mm-hmm. 65 or whatever. So it's kind of, I don't know. It's just stuff I think about sometimes.
Talking about the chicken or the egg.
Here. Yeah, exactly, totally.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
I love when you guys would end your set and you would all play those, like, it's almost like sludge metal or something, where it was like one, you guys are always ending on like, dunk,
yeah.
Dunk.
That's mainly Lynn.
Yeah.
He's just like, all right, Lynn, let's do the last hit, and then
he just keeps going.
It just keeps going.
It's sick though. It's just so different. No one's doing that.
Well, and that particular slot on that particular tour,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes we would have to stretch that set out a little while.
Yeah.
You know, we'd do like, be three or four songs in, and then it's like, I think we're done. We didn't want everyone ever wanted to go over.
Right.
But then be like, oh, nope, there's still
a minute left.
Yeah.
And can't so do another song.
Sometimes we would, yeah, we just would just kind of stretch it out a little bit. And it was the, you know, we were like, I'm pretty sure we were the first on the main stage act of the evening. And it was only a 20-minute set, I think. And so, you know, a lot, it's arenas and or stadiums, excuse me, stadiums. And so, you know, we would jam sometimes. Just people walking in. They just, they don't know who the hell we are. So it's kind of like I wrote with Marcus King yesterday.
Okay. And, I cannot wait to hear what y'all got.
And it's cool, man. It's not going to make anybody any money, but it's really good. And not that we do it for that, but but I love that dude. But he opened the, let's see, the second or third year. I did 3 years with Chris Stapleton, Morgan Stapleton. The year that he came out, I think it was 2019, he opened, we played, and then Chris and them would play. Marcus would open, he and his band would open with War Pigs in these arenas. And I mean, you can't beat Sabbath, but it was like wild, buddy. It was like radical.
I gotta hear this.
Of War Pigs and just screaming and, you know. But for the same reason, because it was just like people who had no idea who either of us were walking into the arena for Chris and Morgan and their band. And so he was like, I'm just going to give it to them. We're just going to have fun up here, you know.
Okay, I got to know, what are the differences in the crowd like for Stapleton versus Luke?
Not much on those crowds. Similar? Yeah, okay. Very much so. Yeah,
I've seen Stapleton once, and it was obviously transcendent. Dude. You know, he's one of the best of all time. But it was at a festival, and the PA wasn't that loud. And I was real drunk, and I was, like, singing Far Away, and people were, like, hushing me.
Hey, man.
I'm like,
that's wrong, first of all. Second
well,
of all.
Well, you've never heard Kurt sing.
Far Away. Yeah.
All right, that's fair. But when I was out there, you got to think the timing of it. The first year was the end of 2016, and then we did 17 and 18, and then a little bit of 19. And so it was right after people saw the moment, you know, on the CMA Awards. Mm-hmm. And so it was like in real time, we were graduating from, he was graduating from, you know, like theaters, big amphitheaters or sheds to arenas. And people were like on fire, man. One night we got to where we got comfortable out there, and we got to where we would, as a band, just like sort of microdose on mushrooms.
Yeah,
the good stuff.
Right before the set. So, like, I mean, like, when we're about to walk out, we would all take the same amount, play our 30-minute set. By about second to last song, we would begin to feel the effects.
You look at each other and go,
hey, we're all here together. We're all on the same page. Well, one of those nights, during that time, it was a sold-out, you know, arena, and we got done with our set, and I think we did a little, might have been a little more than, was it a macro dose?
Yeah.
The energy on Fire Away, like, because, you know, he gets everybody to do the lights, you know, everything goes down, everybody's got their flashlights on, and I seriously became the energy of the lights and was like one in the Stapleton show. But it was this whole, I mean, it was just like powerful, man. The whole energy during that time to be on that tour was just, that's so weird that people would hush you.
Yeah, I think it was just we were just too far away, I guess, from the stage or something, you know, it wasn't his show. It was like a festival. Yeah. But I always wondered that if he kind of had like an older crowd or not. But
it's, man, it's all ages. It's very similar to the Luke crowd in my eyes. The greatest. And I feel that way. I can't wait to go out with the Strays that later on this year, because it's sort of a real similar time frame to be. We're going to do like Madison Square Garden.
Fuck yeah.
The first time I played there was with Chris and them on those tours. But it's going to be really neat to see our audience, their crowd, in the same moment, sort of, as that Chris crowd was. Just everybody's just like just discovering them.
And chomping at the bit.
Yeah, man. It's going to be pretty cool.
So when does that happen?
We start in August, and I don't even know if all of the dates have been announced. So we're doing several dates with them.
Hell yeah.
I love them. I've known them for a long time, man. They're they were like undeniable, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but Brandon especially was like, this dude is like everybody, Elvis and Johnny Cash, you know.
Yeah.
But he was obviously a damn, had that thing, whatever it is. And Drew, the guitar player, I started hanging out with them. They were like almost fresh out of high school. They all started hitting me up on Instagram in like 2017, and Drew would wear me out. He'd like call me all the time, like asking me for advice and shit. And I'd be like, dude, I don't know what to tell you, Drew. You just gotta blow up, man, is what I'd tell him. And yeah, that's what they did it.
Where are they from?
Blowed up. From? Mobile.
Yeah. Oh, are they? Okay.
Yeah. They're badass, man.
Yeah. So that's not too. That's probably not too far from Ellaville, then, because you're sort of in the western side of Georgia.
You would think, but it's so far south. It's, I mean, it ain't that bad. It's like five and a half hours.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So you got that. You got that tour coming up. What else is going on this year?
Oh,
you got some stuff we need to promote or what?
I don't know. like you probably know better than I do. I don't know. I'm gonna go in. I'm recording some new music.
Okay.
And
are you doing the? Are you going back to Land of the Simpsons this time again, or
no? I'm gonna go back to Capricorn down in Macon.
Okay.
And we're gonna try to put something out, and we got that tour. We got some. I don't know. I'm gonna try to write a bunch more this year. Mm-hmm. Like, we've been crazy busy the last few.
Well, congrats on the Luke cut, dude.
Thanks. I told Cappy yesterday. It's like, hey man, what cut? What single? I never had a single, and I was like, every day I expect y'all to be like, all right, well, we're going to go ahead and pull it. And I wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't surprise me with my luck with singles. But so far, so good.
Well, tell us about that. Right. So you, Luke, and Aaron, right?
Yeah, I think we wrote that, I don't know, a couple of years ago. And it was Aaron's first write with Luke. And I've known Luke for a long time.
Yeah.
And, again, he was another one. He didn't, like, bug me or anything with like Drew, not that Drew ever did, but like Luke was a little more discreet.
And
I met Luke right when he first came to town, and he wanted to Andy Miller. I don't know if you ever met Andy back in the day, but he was part of that whole little crew, you know, with everybody. And he's like, man, this dude just moved to town, man, and he's from North Carolina. He's a fan of yours. He just wants to like hang out and have a beer with you and ask, you know, just ask you some questions. Would you be cool with that? Again, I don't know why I can tell him, but I can drink beer and I can tell him what not to do. And so we went to Broadway Brew House and, you know, ate some jerk chicken.
Yeah, I've had the jerk chicken there before.
Yeah, and had some beers, and he asked me all these questions, and I dropped him back off at his, he had a little apartment right down the road here in Hermitage.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was like, he was the first one that I ever watched. I watched him go from nothing to then like leveled up with Hurricane, and like he sent me that album when it was still just a SoundCloud link. Mm-hmm. And I was in New York, I was self-negotiating my record deal with Elektra, getting ready to put out Shine on Rainy Day album, and this is 2016.
Great.
And thanks, man.
Yeah.
And Luke like sent me a link to the Hurricane album. I was like, well, you showed me yours, I'll show you mine. And so I sent him a link to Shine on Rainy Day. Shine on Rainy Day got nominated for a Grammy. Did that Grammy. Luke went on to become a superstar. And so I saw him graduate from little apartment in Hermitage, that pad he had in Germantown.
Yeah, I remember that spot too.
And then watched him graduate again to like, you know, it's just been crazy, man. But anyway, so
he's living in a two-bedroom house right now. It's funny. But yeah.
Well,
for now.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, totally.
And but so he's been so cool to like, he cares that, I don't know, it's like he remembers that shit.
And, well, he's got a deep respect for you,
dude,
in your artistry and your writing.
I love that dude.
Same.
He keeps me apart. I mean, he just keeps including me, and I'm so grateful. And,
yeah.
So he
does that, man. He's good to the people that are good to him.
Yeah,
he always has been. That's why there's, you know, it's like guys on the crew will get Luke tattoos. You know what I mean? He's just the way he treats people.
It's important.
Yeah.
He's important.
I agree.
He cares. He
totally.
But so that's all that happened is he just keeps including me on co-writing.
Yeah.
And so I was going to go out there, and Ray Thierry had just gotten his deal, and he's always been like maybe the greatest. He's like our Kristofferson or Roger Miller, you know. He's just sort of a crazy genius.
Yes.
And he's always been. And so when we were going out there, I hit Luke up and was like, man, I got this dude. One of my best friends, I swear to God, is maybe the greatest of all our time. You mind if he comes and joins in? And so we rode out there at the barn, and we got done with that ride that day. And me and Rich, everybody, he's like, well, what do you think? How'd it go, man? I mean, did we do good? And I was like, I don't fucking know, man. I never know. And and we were pretty sure we didn't do good. And we got back to the, like, I dropped him off at his place. And in that amount of time, Luke had put a live version up on TikTok, and it had like a million views in 20 minutes, you know. And so we were like, all right then. I guess a lot of people have been putting it in the background of their like proposal videos mm-hmm. and stuff. And it influenced him to actually record it and release it.
It's a beautiful song.
Yeah, it's fine.
How did the title come about? Did someone bring the title in, or?
Well, we
obviously it's a collaborative effort, and we're not insinuating anything here. But, you know, just to.
Well, see, I'm real good at if I have an opportunity, especially writing with an artist mm-hmm. that could maybe change my life.
Yep.
No matter how well I know them, I tend to really screw it up, and I just choke, and I can't bring whatever I have to mm-hmm. offer to the table, and And so that day, I had, again, like, overthought the whole deal. And I think I even called Rob Snyder and was just like, how do I not screw this up, man? And he's like, dude, Luke wants to get a good song with you. Like, he wants that to happen. And I was like, well, me too. We pulled up. I was thinking, like, what do you write about anymore, man? Look at all this. You did it. I mean, that's got to blow your mind, you know. And we just got to talking about that, and was like, "How do you write about?" And he, you know, he kind of gets in his head sometimes about like he feels. I don't know if I'm not trying to like.
He's been pretty show open behind. About.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Yeah. And so he worries sometimes for no reason to me, but that he may have like he don't want to lose touch with like what he. Is able to relate with everybody mm-hmm. with, because that's why everybody loves him, because he's so real. Mm-hmm. But it's like, well, man, he worries, like, what if the guy's got it all? What am I going to write about that people even care about anymore? And it's like, well, I mean, you can't buy a perfect day. And so that's kind of how it all happened. We're talking about that. It's like, what mm-hmm. What else can he write about that?
Yeah.
That's what
I love that.
It's always hard because, you know, if you got money, it's easy to say, well, it doesn't really make you happy, you know. But if you don't have it, it's like, well, shit, I'd love some health insurance.
I am trying to have some.
Yeah. And there's been plenty of
off, actually.
Yeah. And definitely Uber Eats has brought me happiness as well. Yeah, but within, but it's like the sentiment of the song, I think, is great. And it's written in such a beautifully simple way that it's just, it's great. I love it since the first time I heard it.
Well,
so
it means a lot, man. Thanks. Yeah. I'm glad he likes it. Cappy likes it, hopefully.
Yeah,
the radio listeners like it.
Yeah,
I don't think they've not liked the Luke song before.
That's the other thing. Yeah,
I think you should be good.
It's it's my first single ever in a 20-year career. I've had like 40 major label artist cuts over the years, and I've never had a radio single. And so Luke, once again, is just like hooking a brother up, man.
Yeah, it's if money grew on trees, you know, I'd miss the leaves.
Yeah, boy. Yeah. That's my favorite line on this.
Me too. I heard that. I go, fuck, that's good. And true, you know?
Yeah, man.
Look at all these ultimately rich people that got all these problems. I'm like, I'm glad I don't have that problem.
Yeah.
You know? And I see some of these people that are like ultra wealthy and they're like always in the media cycle and stuff. I'm like, I would just be out.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's Channing Wilson. I guess I love you, Channing. But Channing has had all this success as a songwriter, and he just keeps wanting to be an artist. It's like, dude, chill out, man. Enjoy your enjoy your life.
Some
Channing.
People just got that fire
no,
burning
I
in
know.
Their belly.
He
know.
Can sing his ass off, too.
Oh, he can.
I just like messing Woo. With him about it.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, you did it. Chill out.
Yeah.
Just kick your shoes off, man. Nope, he's got to keep climbing, baby.
Yeah, don't share back. Nope.
Maybe that's why, like, the universe, like, keeps me keeps that single just out of reach because it knows if I
if I
mess around, and,
I feel like you're a dude that is, you just seem like very grateful for everything that you've got.
I am.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like what you said when we were in the hallway, it's like, my kids are fed and bills are taken care of. I'm doing great. Happy New Year. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's a great way to be.
Very much am.
Yeah. Yeah.
What else? I mean, that's all I ever wanted to do. Make a living writing songs and making music.
I just didn't want to work in any more fucking restaurants. I was like, I'm done with this. This sucks.
I mean, I would go back if I had to, but I really would rather not go back and work for, like, Herod Tree Service again.
Yeah.
being there at 5:30 in the morning. Trying to crank all the trucks, you know. I do like the smell of diesel, but I don't really feel like having to do that every day. I'll go do it here and there.
Just buy a diesel truck with your loot
money.
That's
what I'm talking about. Yeah, I don't want to have to do it.
Yeah.
You know, but I would if I had to, I guess.
Same.
I think that's a part of it too, is like just being grateful for where you're at, and you're in a great place.
Straight up, man.
Getting to make the music that you want to make.
Good band.
Yeah. Great band.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Very much, y'all.
Getting on, I mean, freak, since 2016, amazing tours.
That's what I'm saying. You know? Well, see, that's the other thing is people go, I've read, you know, people be like, man, it seemed like he could just be happy just sitting around down in Georgia, you know, or Wyatt and Brent further along than he is, or you ought to be with your kids more. You know, it's always like so wishy-washy. But the thing is like, I keep getting these opportunities, like from whether it's Stapleton or Luke or the Red Clay Strays or Miranda Lambert or Luke Bryan early on, you know, I'm not going to say no to them, you know. So even if I didn't want a tour, I can't. It's amazing to like get those. It's crazy, man.
Yeah.
Like to have those asks, like, just blows my mind all the time.
Well, I think that's one of the things you talk about too. And I remember speaking of Ray Tierra, I remember Big Rob Snyder saying, Ray Tierra is my favorite songwriter. And I always think about, he's my favorite songwriter's favorite songwriter.
Straight up.
And I think that's another thing of like people like you, like Luke. Again, a lot of people want their
favorite
songwriters. Exactly. It's like favorite songwriter, favorite artist. Like that is just has to be such a big, just kind of like patting the ego a little bit of like they love your music so much that they want to put it on as big of a platform as they can.
It was always early on when I found out that like Willie Nelson had wrote Crazy or, you know, all that, or Roger Miller with all his songs, that I always thought was way cool, that I hoped that I could do that and have the integrity. But what you don't realize when you are starting out and like is the how long it takes to like have, you know, to be respected or like to have street cred or whatever, you know. It's been 20 years. I say a lot of times at my shows, it's only taken me nearly 20 years to get to the bottom, and I'm just glad to be here. But it takes a very long time to like have all that, and but then also, you know, not make a killing but make a decent living doing it. And but I'm not disheartened though either, you know. Like, yeah, I think it's a fine line. It's a balance.
Well, you should feel proud about this record, man.
I am.
Yeah,
I appreciate y'all.
Yeah,
and I know we talked about like the music that you're doing. Is thematically, is that, are you shifting gears a little bit?
Well, I think every album I've intentionally wanted to not be the same as the one before it.
Mm-hmm.
But more than anything, it's just that's another color of, you know, of the another leaf from the same tree. You know, mm-hmm. It's all got the same root system, and I just want to sometimes a rock.
Yeah.
But I don't think that I'm necessarily shifting gears. It's mainly, I just want people to at least expect a little bit of rock and roll. Sometimes we'll feel like rocking.
Yeah.
And you know, mm-hmm. The next album might be more songwriter or whatever. I don't know. I don't ever know. Let the song lead the way.
Amen.
Hey, that's it. Especially if you're keeping writing like it sounds like you want to focus on this year.
That's correct. Happens. That's right. Yeah. I want to just do it all. Anything, what we were just talking about. I just like having the opportunity to do any of this at all. And, that's all I'm trying to do, man.
That's
right. Hey, I listened to Aaron Tannenbaum's episode. That last time. He was one of, like, the first dude I met in town. Other, like, Luke Bryan introduced me and Aaron. And
I love Aaron.
Dude,
he's a great guy.
That was a cool pod too.
It was great, man. And he like never does stuff like that. I called him afterwards because it was, yeah, that dude early on, he booked me. I thought he was going to tell this story for a second at one part. I don't remember what y'all's question was, but he said, I thought he was going to tell this, but he booked me. I was like, man, I just want to play shows, man. Just put me out there, you know? And I had been out in L.A. and working with Shooter Jennings and thought I had some shit going on, you know? And so he booked me a show, headline show at the Exit Inn in Nashville and on like a Thursday night, and nobody was there. And it was Aaron's way of being like, yeah.
Welcome to the big
leagues.
This
is where you are, yeah, man. And anyway, he's always, man, I love that guy. Anyway, I just wanted to say it was a great podcast.
Well,
great episode.
We're talking about this earlier today. It's like the booking agents are in this weird spot where it's like the artists like book me shows. Well, on the other side is the venues, and they're in the middle. So it's like if the venue's not happy, then it looks bad on the artist, you know, and looks bad on the agent, and just trying to find that spot.
Straight up. And all my favorite people thus far, or anybody that I've actually, you know, had whatever success or relationship with, are people like Aaron or people like Luke or people where, like, Aaron just seems like you were like, what's the secret to you becoming, like, the top agent, you know, in a span of whatever, 20 years? And he was like, I don't know. I just try to treat people good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he's not trying to wheel and deal and all that. He's just like, and he's telling the truth. He's always been that way. And that's just my favorite kind of folks. Yeah. When you do this, in this business, there are so many people that they just feel like they got to be scheming all the time, you know? And I love when it works out like that for, like, people like that, you know?
And you get to sort of put your seal of approval when you work with people like that too, you know?
Straight up.
And it's like you get to choose who's in your band and who's your booking agent and who's your management and yada, 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 and all that stuff, and just work with people that aren't fucking dicks.
That's all you got to try to do. Yeah, man.
Dick's like, yeah.
Yep.
Nick would say, be a good person.
Yeah.
That's the truth, though.
Yep. It's not that hard.
It comes back in spades, for sure.
It may take longer sometimes, but damn, it's worth it, I think. Mm-hmm. Because then once you do succeed, then you have succeeded with all these good people, and you're all excited to be there, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, that's it. You can't do it by yourself, but the more people you put that you believe in and that believe in you and that are good folks,
yep.
I mean, the more it's going to just fill your heart and fill, hopefully, your wallet too.
You can't beat
it. At
the
end of it.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Yeah, the industry, music industry, is changing and getting really fucking weird, and it's hard and confusing. But it's easier to go to battle with good people, I feel like.
Yeah.
And people that you love. So.
Oh, hell yeah.
No doubt. That's it. All right, brother. Anything else we got to cover here?
We did great.
Yeah.
We're so good.
We did fucking great at podcasting. We appreciate your time, man.
No, thank y'all for.
And come back anytime when your next record comes out. Let's listen to it.
Well, and we don't even have to talk about the record. We talk about AI and ancient aliens.
Okay, I got a podcast idea. You will micro dose.
Macro dose.
Hero dose.
Yeah.
Oh, well, the ambulance been here dragging my corpse out, probably. We'll figure that out. That'll be another episode.
What, do you have? Like a title for the podcast?
I was just going to say we just do mushrooms and just talk about AI.
That's it.
Yeah.
The boys do mushrooms. Like an Always Sunny episode.
Yeah, the gang does mushrooms and talks.
My buddies, you know, who are polar and opposite of the political spectrum, they had Mike Harris and my buddy Adam Fisher had a great idea. It's called Get Right or Get Left. And they sit down at a coffee table.
That's brilliant.
And in the middle of the coffee, on one side is a bowl of, you know, weed, and then the other side is a case of beer, and they just go hash it out, get right or get left. I think that's a great idea.
That's funny.
I mean, that's a good title too, probably.
I know. So, yeah. So now, sorry, Adam and Mike, if people.
Well, I promise not to steal it. Unless we get a weed sponsor or something, then I got to take an Uber to the podcast studio.
Well, that's a call coming in right now.
Yeah, who knows.
What a blessing it would be to have to take an Uber to the podcast.
Jeez.
Yeah. Maybe 1 year, you know?
Cheers, y'all. Thanks again.
All right, brother.
Hey, appreciate you coming on.
Appreciate
you. Good to see you. Too, whatever, man. Cheers, y'all.
All right, y'all. Thanks for listening to Sky Pies. Bye.